Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and the decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions are those of the speaker.
Hello, and welcome to SCOTUS Cast. I'm your host, Kyle Hammerness, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. We are here today to discuss Coinbase Incorporated versus Suzuki, in which the Supreme Court issued a 9-0 decision on May 23rd, 2024. It is my honor to introduce our guest today, Professor Tamar Michel. Professor Michel is an associate professor at the University of Alberta, and she is a global expert in arbitration. She has practiced and researched arbitration at international law firms and has authored over 50 publications, as well as amicus briefs to the United States Supreme Court. Her arbitration scholarship has been cited by the Supreme Court of Canada, the Supreme Court of Israel, and the Supreme Court of Texas. And with that, I'd like to turn things over to Professor Michel to give us the background of the case. Professor Michel, take it away.
Sure, and thanks so much for having me. So this case involved a purported class action alleging that a sweepstakes competition that was advertised by Coinbase was unlawful under California laws. But it's important to understand exactly what aspect of this dispute was before the Supreme Court. The court was not deciding the merits of the plaintiff's claims against Coinbase. Rather, Coinbase was appealing the district court's and Ninth Circuit's refusal to enforce an arbitration clause contained in its user agreement. The plaintiffs argued, and the lower courts agreed, that the arbitration clause was unenforceable because Coinbase's user agreement was superseded by its subsequent sweepstakes rules. Now, those rules contained an exclusive forum selection clause designating California courts as the forum to resolve disputes rather than arbitration. But even this aspect of the case was not directly before the Supreme Court. The specific issue decided by the court concerned a so-called delegation clause that was contained in Coinbase's user agreement. Now, a delegation clause means that the parties have agreed to refer to the arbitrator not only merits disputes, but also disputes concerning the existence, scope, validity, or enforceability of the arbitration clause itself. These are known as arbitrability disputes. Now, in these cases I mentioned, the arbitrability dispute concerned the allegedly superseding sweepstakes rules. Coinbase argued before the lower courts that in light of the delegation clause, it was the arbitrator rather than the court that should decide this dispute. And the district court disagreed and the Ninth Circuit affirmed. So the Ninth Circuit held that the delegation clause that was contained in Coinbase's user agreement could not be applied, because the question of whether the forum selection clause in the sweepstakes rules superseded the arbitration clause in the user agreement concerned the existence rather than the scope of the arbitration clause. And under Ninth Circuit precedent, only so-called scope questions could be delegated to the arbitrator, not contract formation or existence questions. Now, once the Ninth Circuit decided that it was for the court to determine the arbitrability challenge, it held that under California contract law, the forum selection clause in the sweepstakes rules indeed revoked the arbitration clause that was contained in the user agreement. And therefore, the court denied Coinbase's motion to compel arbitration. Now, the Supreme Court granted cert to decide only the delegation aspect of the Ninth Circuit decision, specifically whether, and I quote, a judge or an arbitrator should decide whether a subsequent contract supersedes an earlier arbitration agreement that contains a delegation clause.
All right. Well, thank you so much for summarizing how the case got to the Supreme Court. Can we turn to the decision now? How did the Supreme Court come out on this?
Definitely. So the Supreme Court affirmed the outcome reached by the Ninth Circuit in a short unanimous opinion with Justice Gorsuch writing an even shorter concurring opinion. And although the court's opinion seems narrow and straightforward, it actually deals with two very important issues in arbitration law. First, the court addressed for the first time challenges directed at a delegation clause rather than at an arbitration clause. And the court referred to such a challenge to a delegation clause as an, I quote, a fourth layer or fourth order dispute. Now, in previous cases, such as Henry Sheen and Rent-A-Center, the court only addressed the first three layers of disputes that parties could have that concern an arbitration agreement. And I'll go briefly through those three layers and the fourth layer. The first layer is the merits dispute between the parties. So as I said, in this case, it's just the legality of the sweepstakes competition. Now, the second layer is a dispute over arbitrability, meaning whether the merits dispute should be submitted to arbitration. In this case, whether the arbitration clause was superseded by the sweepstakes rules, which did not contain such a clause. The third layer is a dispute over who should decide the arbitrability challenge. Normally, it's the court that decides. But if there's a delegation clause, then normally it's the arbitrator who decides. So the court in this case now added a fourth layer dispute. Who decides a dispute concerning the third layer question of who decides arbitrability? And that's a mouthful. And in other words, to try and put it more simply, a fourth layer dispute concerns who decides a challenge to the delegation clause itself. So in this case, whether the delegation clause was superseded by the sweepstakes rules, which did not contain such a clause. And the court held in this case that this fourth layer question is for the court to decide. Now, if that's not enough, further complicating things is that in this particular case, the challenge to the arbitration clause and the challenge to the delegation clause were essentially the same challenge, that these clauses are not enforceable because of the superseding sweepstakes rules. So this leads me to the second important issue addressed by the court, which is the severability principle. So pursuant to the severability principle, arbitration clauses are severable from the remainder of the contract, meaning they survive even if the contract is invalid or unenforceable. Therefore, an arbitration clause should be enforced by the court unless a party challenges the arbitration clause itself, rather than the underlying contract. The same applies to the delegation clause. The court should enforce it and refer arbitrability challenges to the arbitrator unless a party has challenged the delegation clause itself. Now, in previous decisions, the Supreme Court held that in order for a court to decide the challenge to the delegation clause, the challenge must be directed specifically, that's a quote, at that clause, rather than the arbitration clause or the contract as a whole. But the problem was it was unclear whether a party could rely on the same exact ground to challenge both the delegation clause and the arbitration clause, or whether it had to advance an independent basis for challenging the delegation clause. So in this case, the plaintiffs challenged the delegation clause on the ground that the arbitration clause was superseded by the sweepstakes rules. And they argued that, well, if the arbitration clause no longer existed, then neither did the delegation clause. Now, Coinbase argued that the plaintiffs did not challenge really the delegation clause specifically, and therefore that the Ninth Circuit should have enforced the delegation clause and allowed the arbitrator to decide the arbitrability challenge. But the Supreme Court disagreed. Although the court refused to decide whether the severability principle was even implicated in this case, it held that it was nonetheless satisfied. The court explained that as long as a party challenges the arbitration or delegation clause, as the case may be, the severability principle is satisfied, and that it's not necessary that a party challenge only those clauses. Rather, a challenge may apply, quote unquote, equally to the whole contract and to an arbitration or a delegation clause. So in this case, the court noted in a footnote that the plaintiff's challenge to the delegation and the arbitration clauses, namely that they were superseded by the sweepstakes rules, was a sufficiently specific challenge to the delegation clause to satisfy the severability rule. So those are the two main issues that the court decided in the arbitration law.
Thank you so much for that, that summary of the decision. What are your thoughts on the decision? What do you think the consequences are from this decision?
So first of all, I have to say that I was a bit surprised by the court's decision in the sense that after the oral argument, I wasn't at all sure that the court would even address the question presented on its merits, because actually both parties seem to agree that the case should simply be remanded to the Ninth Circuit. But in any event, here we are with the decision, and on the substance, I have two main comments. First, I think that notwithstanding the added complexity of the fourth layer arbitrability questions, the court's opinion does clarify that challenges to arbitration clauses and challenges to delegation clauses should be distinguished, and that courts need to deal with the fourth layer challenges to delegation clauses before reaching any third layer challenge to the arbitration clause. The problem is that the Ninth Circuit in this case didn't really decide any challenge to the delegation clause. It focused on the challenge to the arbitration clause, the allegedly superseding contract, which is a third layer dispute. Now, because it found that this challenge concerned the existence of the arbitration clause rather than its scope, the Ninth Circuit held that it was for the court to decide as a matter of principle. So regardless of whether there is a delegation clause or not. So the Supreme Court didn't address the Ninth Circuit reasoning regarding this existence versus scope challenges. And I thought this was unfortunate because it's actually the subject of a massive circuit split. But nonetheless, and at the same time, I think it's pretty clear, and Justice Gorsuch pointed this out in his concurring opinion, that the court did not endorse this reasoning of the Ninth Circuit. So we're left with that question open. Now, Justice Gorsuch seemed to suggest that parties could delegate so-called existence questions to the arbitrator if they clearly provide for that in their delegation clause. But honestly, I think it's a bit unrealistic or unlikely that parties would expressly address in their contract every conceivable arbitrability challenge that might arise in the future. And in any event, it would still be for the court to interpret the delegation clause and determine the party's intentions. Now, my second comment is that although the court expressly limited its decision to situations involving two separate contracts, as was the case here, one with an arbitration and delegation clauses and one without, I think that the opinion sets out more general principles that arguably make it easier for parties to challenge delegation clause in future cases. For instance, the court's comments regarding the severability principle now make it clear that parties can challenge a delegation clause on the same exact ground they're using to challenge an arbitration clause or the contract as a whole. This may be the case in particular with challenges such as fraudulent inducement or non-signatories, which question whether an arbitration agreement was validly concluded at all. Now, it might be less likely with other types of challenges, for instance, unconscionability, because it would be more difficult, I think, to extend an argument that the arbitration clause or other provisions of the contract are unconscionable to the delegation clause itself. Now, finally, I'm also not convinced that the court's reasoning cannot be applied to a single contract that contains arbitration and delegation clauses. For instance, there might be a single contract with an arbitration clause that delegates arbitrability questions to the arbitrator, but also at the same time contains a carve-out excluding certain disputes from arbitration. An argument that that carve-out limits the scope of the arbitration clause, which is a third layer question, could easily be turned into a fourth layer question of whether the carve-out actually limits the delegation clause. And this actually happened in the Fifth Circuit decision in the Henry Shin case following the Supreme Court's remand of that case. And it led the Fifth Circuit to decide the challenge to the arbitration clause itself rather than referring it to the arbitrator in accordance with the delegation clause.
Well, thank you so much, Professor, for joining us. This was really, really great, and we're always happy to have you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental power is essential to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.